The sound of the universe. Today, Rev. Russ had a lovely sermon. One of the questions he asked us to think about was, what is our purpose in life? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we here? And he gave the example of the Fillmores, who made a commitment, both Charles and Myrtle, to dedicate themselves to a life of service to others. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Made a long statement as to how they were going to dedicate themselves to a life of service. Not in last week's talk, but in the talk the week before that, we discussed something from the Bhagavad Gita, which was when God created man, he also created yajna, or sacrifice. Sacrifice. Our ability to devote or sacrifice our life to selfless service. Selfless service. And yet, through our nature, we often think selfishly. We think thoughts that are selfish, they're about ourselves. And sometimes we aren't even able to think about why we are here, because something's going on in our life. We're busy working, we have this challenge, and someone said that. So we need some tools so that we can remember our purpose in life and why we are here. We need some tools to control our human nature, and that's the subject for today's talk. One of the tools we need is how to come to terms with our thoughts, our minds, contents of our minds, our thoughts, so that instead of them ruling us, we have some control over them. That's a tool. So we're going to look at a sloka which addresses that. And we began addressing the mind last week. We're going to go into it some more. It's a favorite topic of Satchidananda. The Bhagavad Gita, the song of the Lord. We're going to look at this particular verse, sloka number 5. Fortunate are those seekers who are no longer deluded by the tree of life, the knowledge of good and evil, and thus are liberated from pride. So the tree of life is the tree of knowledge, or the tree of good and evil. This and that. Where do those ideas reside? Where does that knowledge reside? In our minds and thoughts. Because they have conquered personal attachments, they ever abide in their true identity, which is the self, Christ consciousness. Conquered personal attachments. Where do personal attachments reside? In our thoughts, in our minds. Personal attachments. Attachments to things, relationships. What I should do, what I shouldn't do. No longer disturbed by personal desires, where do they reside? Which have completely abated, or the pairs of opposites, such as pleasure and pain, they attain that eternal goal. These are all mind attributes, personal desires. Where do they reside? Mind. I would like this, I don't want that. Personal desires. We heard that Charles and Myrtle Fillmore dedicated themselves to an impersonal desire to be of service to others. And yet most of our desires are personal. So how to abate them and how to be free of the pairs of opposites. We have them, they just don't have us. One of Satchidananda's favorite topics. Okay. So let's look at his commentary. I'm going to jump ahead, since we covered some of this material before, and I think I'm going to go here. Yeah. All right, we're jumping in the middle. Can the knower really be unhappy, or does the knower just know something else is unhappy? This is sort of where we ended last week. We talked about you wake up yesterday and you feel happy. Wake up this morning, you feel unhappy. Something happened. Happy, unhappy. I woke up yesterday, felt good, life was pleasurable, you ate a great breakfast. Woke up this morning, you're in some pain. Some pain. How can we be free of those things? And Nancy Starr brought up last week, if you remember, well, the Dalai Lama was always happy. Remember that? Dalai Lama was always happy.
Not always.
Seems to be. Whenever you see him, he just seems happy. Just seems happy. Good morning. Welcome.
I guess he's, even though he might be feeling other emotions, that he chooses to be happy, right?
We can only guess. We can only guess. Yet, if we look at the teachings of the Gita and Buddhism, I'm guessing that the happiness, or maybe the joyfulness or peacefulness, of the Dalai Lama comes from here, not from here. So there's a happiness that I remember reading the story of Ramakrishna, the great Indian mystic. And one day he just decided, he saw some other saint smiling, he decided he would wear a smile, a faint smile on his face from that day forth. And he did. Not a happiness smile, but just a faint smile to represent peace that he felt, the joy, which you might call happiness. So happiness has different meanings, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If happiness is grounded in some deep awareness, the awareness of Om, for example, that's a special kind of happiness. And there's no unhappiness in that experience. So even if someone in Dalai Lama's retinue behaves badly, and that's something they shouldn't, the Dalai Lama, as head of a large organization, needs to reprimand that person, he needn't do it with unhappiness or deep dissatisfaction. He may have some dissatisfaction in his mind, and there's something his mind helps him to figure out, but he can do it with a deep feeling of peace. Whereas for us, most of the time when we're happy, it has more to do with circumstances, not something that's continually welling up inside ourselves. So that's why our happiness can be disturbed if the next day something happens to disturb our happiness. So happiness, unhappiness, you might look at as residing in the mind. Or is that deeper joyful peace or happiness is something that comes from the heart or the capital S self. As Satchidananda points that out, he points out that we know this about ourselves. So, yesterday I was happy and today I'm not happy. There's a part of us that knows that. So he's saying, can the knower, that aspect of ourselves that knows that, can that knower really be unhappy? Or does the knower just know something is unhappy? The mind. Mind can harbor unhappy thoughts and it's unhappy. Or can harbor happy thoughts and be happy. And we know that in the same situation, one person can experience a situation like, oh my God, feel
distress,
unhappy. And another person from a different perspective can witness that same exact thing, breathe into it, and not be disturbed by those circumstances, but see it from a different perspective. So that happiness and unhappiness is in the mind, and the knower notices this. So by getting these concepts in our head, we can start to break free from the tyranny of the mind. Let's see where he goes with this. That's how to constantly analyze. Now, Satchidananda is going to recommend that we do some mind work. We analyze our mind. There's some other ways, by the way, to free oneself of the tyranny of the mind. I'll bring that up. Keep asking yourself, am I doing this? As you lift the log or lift your arm, ask, am I lifting the log? No. My mind wants it lifted, and my hands are helping. The real one is just watching. My mind has a desire to do this. It is directed, the body here, and said to the hands, lift that log. Lift that log. We did a little exercise last week, remember? Let's do it again. Everyone willing to do a little 30-second exercise? Open that up. Now, let the observer part of you... Uh-oh, someone had to drink. Okay, here we go. Let the part of you that's watching everything direct your mind to direct your arm to go up. Mind just told your arm to go up. Now direct your mind to lower your arm. Maybe we got that, maybe we didn't. Who raised the arm? Who gave the directions? Who gave the directions to lower our thoughts? Our thoughts controlling our muscles.
And we are not our thoughts. We are not our...
We are the observer.
Right.
In a larger sense, we are everything. There is an aspect of ourselves that observes. It's always watching. And if you watch more with more discernment, you might notice that your mind has something to do with your actions. Mind has something to do, and you're noticing that. So he puts it like this. The body directed it. Here we go. Come on, lift the log or lift your hand, put it there. And the body is obeying the mind. It's true, literally, you are the eternal witness. You are the eternal witness. The real you, capitalist self. As Satchidananda recommends, you can constantly analyze who's doing this. Notice it's the mind. I have another little saying that I often use when my mind gets agitated. That helps me separate myself from the mind. And it's a saying. The saying is, can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? Can you step back from your own mind and thus understand all things? You can think of yourself, visualize yourself, stepping back from your mind, and there's your mind, and you're standing under it, watching it. Understand all things. Whatever works for you to help you start to experience.
I like your
movie theater.
In the movie theater, yeah.
Please share that again. It's wonderful.
We shared that last week. Right. We are not the mind. Oh, that's
good. Last week, the audience wasn't here except for you and I. Maybe they'll.
Well, Susan was here. Were you guys here last week? No. Yes, you were here.
Yeah. Oh, if it's brief, go ahead.
I'd love to hear it again.
Yeah.
Oh, you do. Wow.
Yeah, my mind needs repetition.
Right. In fact, I'm going to actually record that because it's such a win, and I want the author's exact words.
Strength of course is out here.
This little story comes from a book called The Four Agreements. The Four Agreements? Heard of that book? Yes. And it comes from the section, Don't Make Assumptions. Yeah. Don't make assumptions. And the story goes like this. One day you decide to go see a movie. Have some fun, see a movie. Walk into the multiplex. You walk into the movie theater ready to see a movie, and nobody's there. This movie. Nobody's there. Except one person is down there. You look up to see what's playing on the screen, and oh my goodness, this is my life that's being displayed on the screen. And you watch your life unfold in front of you on the screen. This is your life. This is what's real for you. All the things you find good, all the things you disapprove of, all the ones you love, the people you don't love, they're all there on the screen. And you look down in the audience and say, who's that person watching that movie? It's you. And you were watching that movie totally engrossed. And you know how you get in a movie, how you suspend belief? Even
disbelief.
The Wizard of Oz. All the munchkins are true and it's all real because you suspend belief. It's so wonderful. Well, your movie of life is so wonderful. There you are, having suspended belief, and everything you see there is real. And it's your mind. And part of you is watching that and going, that's an interesting thing. But this is a boring movie. I'm going to go find another one. So you walk down the multiplex hall. The usher hasn't caught you because you didn't pay the money. You're not supposed to go see the other one. You walk in the next multiplex, and oh my God, there's something similar. There's a movie of someone's life being displayed, and there's one person down there watching it, and yep, the life is strange. It sort of looks like your life, but it isn't exactly your life. And that person down there is so immersed in it, and that's so real for them. That person is your mother, and she's looking at the movie of your life. And everything you do in that movie is perfect and can't be improved. Yet in the movie you just came from, that person is making a lot of mistakes and you have a lot of judgments on what that person is doing in your movie. You see yourself as being perfectly, not doing anything wrong. And that's your mother's experience of you.
And in the next one, your father is watching.
We don't want to go there.
Right. And then in the other one, your little sister, whom you terrorize, is watching her movie of you. My little sister loves me deeply, but she never forgets the time I terrorized her, scared her. Now she holds it in loving consciousness, but at the time, she complained to my mother and I got punished.
I noticed when we had us holding our arm up, I realized that I couldn't lower that arm.
Yeah.
And it's like being in the movie theater, you couldn't affect, sitting here, you couldn't affect what's going on in that screen.
It's someone's reality.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's reality. So by these little stories, it gives us some power to step back from our own minds and see our minds are built up with stories, full of stories and judgments and evaluations, ways of looking at things. And that's not who we are. We are that observer. Satchitananda would say that's the truth.
In that story, we are the observer is the one in the seat or the one who just walked into the...
Well, in the story, the one that walks in. The observer's going and noticing different realities. No, the one in the seat, there's no other movie theater for them. Yeah. This is reality. There's no other movie theater. It's just like for us, our reality is the only theater we watch. And some people have an incredible ability to put themselves in other people's shoes and see the world from other people's perspective.
Yeah.
Usually not for too long. Mostly we're in our own experience.
But maturity, conscious, race consciousness should allow us to develop that more and more, the ability to see something through someone, to have empathy, to see something from their perspective. The American Indians have the saying, please don't judge until you've walked a mile in my shoes. In my moccasins.
Yes.
So.
First walk a mile in my moccasins. We've heard all these stories, so we know about this. This is not a surprise. Yet how do we incorporate it in our everyday life so that we can use what we know as a tool? When our movie screen presents us with an uncomfortable reality, how can we transcend an uncomfortable reality through these tools?
I use that tool for don't take things personally, because if I can even get a little bit of a snapshot of, like, say this person yelled at me, if I get a snapshot of it from a distance, I can realize, oh, that person was just grumpy or hungry. But when I'm sitting in my own body being snapped at, it's a different story. It's more personal, it's an attack versus,
That's right.
Yes. It may be that some people, when they get attacked, are just feeling attacked and hold on to that forever.
Yeah.
It's called a grudge.
Yes.
Or a resentment. And it resides where? In the heart. In the heart. It's sad because it weakens the heart. It covers up or veils the real self. That is a self of love, a resentment or a grudge.
Mm-hmm.
And when through tools and a spiritual yearning to go beyond our potential resentments and grudge, either we see something immediately while it's going on, as you pointed out, or if not, maybe a little while later, or the next morning we say, ah, that person is having a bad hair day. And I react. That person is having a bad hair day, I react. Now, for some of us, we may feel like certain people of prominence have continuous bad hair days, and we may react continuously to some public images. And does that affect who we are? Someone has a bad hair day or is committed to bad hair days.
I was actually going to ask you about that, because originally you were speaking about circumstances dictate the happiness. You were talking about, or happiness. You're talking about the Dalai Lama is always staying calm, and he doesn't feel calm and peaceful, but he's the head of an organization, so that's how the energy he gives off. And then you said that the overall, this is from my, what I heard, the overall gist is that we want to be in a spot where the circumstances don't dictate your emotions. Is that, I guess expand on that. I had someone else tell me that, I want to say about a year and a half ago. They were like, the goal is to be, I guess, happy in no matter what situation. And that just baffled me. Like, if you're a prisoner of war, you're POW, you're happy. Like, I guess maybe I'm looking at it in absolutes. Like, either I'm all or very, very sad, or the person. Because I can't imagine a POW being super happy. They can, when you talk to them, they will say, oh, or like John McCain says that I got through it because I focused on the next minute. And then after that minute, I focused on the next minute. And then I was always, I wasn't
putting myself in the circumstances I was in that moment. But to me, when someone says happiness and peace, it's more of a, it's like, I don't know, the message I'm receiving is it can be in any situation, this happiness and peace, such as the Dalai Lama has, and I just don't believe it, yes, or I don't understand it yet.
Good. Good. That's a great position to come from. Not even. And yet you're hearing it, so you have a not belief that you can test. There was a man in a concentration camp who wrote a book about it later. I always have difficulty remembering his quote. Perhaps some of you will remember this.
Viktor Frankl's quote?
Pardon?
Viktor Frankl.
Viktor Frankl, what did he say? Something like this, they can take away everything, but they can never take away my right or ability to choose. And he chose not to hold this experience as bad. Now, this doesn't mean he was super happy or super sad, but rather he came from a different perspective. Super happy to me sounds like kind of a mind thing. Oh, I'm super happy today. Tomorrow I'm super sad. This happiness is a different kind.
It's a balance. It's a balance.
A balance.
An even keel. In a storm, you can ride out the storm.
So it's that small, not super happiness, but that small smile that says, I've seen some pretty bad things in this concentration camp. They've taken away my family, my friends, my food, my cleanliness, my dignity for some people, no respect, and yet they cannot take away my ability to choose how I will hold this experience. Cannot take that away.
That's going deep. Most of us react on the surface.
And he chose to hold this experience in a special light. And at the end of the war, as they're emptying the concentration camp and taking everyone away because the Allied forces were entering in, took everyone away, he chose to stay. He was a doctor and minister to the sick people there and not go with the people who were supposedly liberated. Well, bless their hearts, they weren't liberated, they're taken somewhere and all machine gunned to death, and he survived the war along with some sick people. So we never know. Can we step back from our own minds, which are sometimes super happy and sometimes super unhappy, step back and thus understand all things? That's the challenge. We have to put it to the test.
So we have examples like the one you just spoke about, and John McCain. We in our lives don't go through those extremes.
No.
Okay? But even in those extremes, there are examples of what is possible. So certainly in our trials, as mild as they are compared to those examples, we can hope to learn from their experience.
Learn from their experience, right. I've been in concentration camps. So those people under extreme pressures were able to choose how they would hold an experience. Maybe I can.
In my much easier trials.
Easier trials. So am I willing just to be open to it and see if it might be true for me? We don't have to believe it or not believe it. Are we open to experience it? Just in case it's true. Just in case we made a mistake. Are we open to experience it when it shows up? So we go, oh, now I got it.
Part of our thought process is that if you accept the idea that we're a spiritual being having a physical experience,
mm-hmm.
you can look at it and say, oh, look at this. Look what's going on now. I've chosen to go through this for some sort of learning or whatever. Let's see how this plays out. How am I going to respond to this? What do I do here?
That's a good frame of reference.
Great tool. I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. I'm super happy, super sad. I'm a spiritual being. Yeah. The observer.
Being the observer, yeah.
So we have to pick the tool that resonates with us and then use it.
And the other half of that one, and I don't know what you're talking about, is the truth with a big T or a little T?
Yes.
With the little T and the big T.
Very good.
Yeah, the little T is the movie theater. That's my reality.
Yeah.
And there's another little T in the next one.
Yeah.
The big T is something that somehow persists, doesn't change. So we just need to be open, if that is a possibility, see what shows up. Well, Satchitananda says that is our eternal goal, to arrive at this awareness of the observer aspect of ourselves. That's our goal. But he says it's not that you're going to literally going to arrive at that state someday. You are already there. But somehow you don't seem to recognize it. You're already there, but somehow you don't believe it or recognize it. He's challenging us. You seem to have forgotten your real nature. Again, he's challenging us. You have slipped into kind of a sleep. Kind of a sleep. So he's challenging us to open ourselves up this experience of our capital S self. You assume all these qualities. Oh, I'm rich. I'm poor. I have some relatives that will tell me I'm poor. Well, they're not as poor as some poor people I know. And I tell them, well, I'm rich. Well, maybe people have a lot more money than I am, but I'm rich. I prefer to have that my mind have that thought. And I can step back and look at it and say, yeah, mind, keep a hold of that good thought. Healthy thought. Keep hold of that one.
I am 5'5" tall. For the first part of my life, I thought I was short. And then I decided I was tall.
You're one of the biggest personalities I've come across.
It was my choice, though. Yeah.
Of course.
Glass half full or glass half empty?
Well, yeah.
We get to choose.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, are we full or are we hungry? You know, people who, when the least bit of hunger rises in them, say, oh, I'm starving.
Yeah.
Teenagers are like that. If lunch is half an hour late, oh, I'm starving, Mom. What's the...
Or if they don't have a constant distraction, I'm so bored.
Bored.
They're
right. And then they look at their iPhones and get distracted, and they're not just starving anymore. They're busy playing with friends. Those are all in the mind. Happy and happy. We could say super happy or super sad. That's what
I asked someone last week, a petitioner. I said, how are you doing this week? He's an older, wiser man. And he said, or how are you doing today? And he says, I haven't decided yet.
Good for you. Well, that's a waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you need to leave now?
It's just the service. Yeah, the service is starting.
Well, the service is going to start in about 3 minutes. Why don't we close now? We've made enough progress for today. We'll continue on next week. So let's keep that image in mind as we sound our Om, of the whole universe being filled with the sound of Om. And as we make that sound, we're just mirroring what's already there. We're mirroring the whole universe sound of Om. Let's begin with 3 conscious breaths. And with a deep in breath.
Thank you, Steve.
And go in peace.
Happy Father's Day.
Father's Day.
Yeah, happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's. I am a happy father. My daughter's going to call later, she told me. It's a challenge for us to experience our minds from a deeper place and experience all the things the mind does. How the mind controls our emotions, it chooses how we are. There's many little step backs we need to step to understand our minds.
It amazes me how so much it goes back to the Four Agreements.
Right.
Don't take anything personally.
Don't make any assumptions.
Be impeccable with your word. That's one that's been working.
Yes, be impeccable. You see, when you're in the movie theater watching the movie of your life, buying into it is not. You're not being impeccable with your word. There's something there you're buying into that maybe needs to be looked at again.
And that includes the words you're telling yourself.
And then the last one was, do your best, of course, and then you're good to go. Don't be down on yourself. Just do your best and be happy. Not super happy, but just, just content. Probably a better word.
The fifth agreement was.
The fifth agreement. Yes, it was the fifth agreement.
Oh yeah,
you translated to be discernment. No, don't be skeptical. Be skeptical.
Attachments.
The fifth agreement is be skeptical, but learn to listen.
That's.
And that applies to just what we said today. When we hear be skeptical, we think, oh, the used car salesman is trying to put another one over on me. Be skeptical, not out there, but be skeptical of your own thoughts, but learn to listen deeply. Learn to listen from that observer place. What did I just say?
You know, what's interesting.
What was I just thinking?
You know, in the moment, it's much harder, especially when the reaction is so deep, but away afterwards. And then using the four steps, what am I observing?
Okay.
So I'm going to thoughts. What am I feeling instead of my thoughts? What are my needs instead of shouting out or moving to a reactive strategy? And how do I self-connect with in that? With a big T, instead of the little T that you mentioned.
Satchitananda would say, if you have the reactive experience at this point in time, and it's not until the next morning that you can step back from it and get a little perspective, and say, wonderful, now see if you can move that to the night of, and move shorten the interval of time between when you have the reaction and you notice it. Just let that be your goal. Shorten that interval. And then he promises at some point you notice in the moment that your mind is reacting. You notice right away, oh, they're having a bad hair day. And yet, in life, we know there are different levels of challenge and upset. There are minor ones, there are major ones, there are short-term ones, there are long-term ones. And when we get in a situation where there's a long-term major upset, it'd be good if we had some training beforehand so we can be prepared for whatever life deals.
When you say training, what are the ways that you train?
Just what we do here today. I have my little mantras. Can you step back from your own mind and misunderstand all things? Can you deal with the most vital matters by letting events take their course?
Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will?
Love them and
can you love people and lead them without imposing your will?
Oh, lead by example.
Can you love people and lead them without imposing your will? Can you let your body become supple as a newborn child? Let the energy always be flowing through you. Supple. Can you coax your mind from its wandering right now and keep to the original oneness? Can you cleanse your inner vision so you see, until you see nothing but the light? You can apply this to others, see light in others. Can you cleanse your inner vision until you see nothing but the light from you? Can you cleanse your inner vision until you only experience the light from yourself? Those are some of the sayings that I have memorized, and I use them usually daily. And something new always seems to come up that those sayings apply to, and they help me to retain my inner oneness. Yeah.
What's the other one that you used in this moment, right now?
Another one I use, I think this is what you're referring to. This is Thich Nhat Hanh. I use this for a walking meditation. Breathing in, I calm my body, and I notice as I calm my body, all my thoughts sort of exit. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Now for me, it's my feet that smile. And they smile at me. Of course, I'm walking. So breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Why are my feet laughing at me? Smiling. Dwelling in the present moment. Birds are singing, my tinnitus is ringing. In my footsteps, breathing in the present moment. I know it's a wonderful moment. My feet know it's a wonderful moment. So you're still laughing, like, hey, it's a wonderful moment. And my feet are noticing me as I'm walking along. Hey, wake up, it's a wonderful moment. Breathing in, I calm my body. Breathing out, I smile. Dwelling in the present moment. I know it's a wonderful moment. Actually, my feet know it. Convey the message. It's a wonderful moment, Steve. It's just your mind.
Very good.
These are all techniques.
That's a good one.
That you can choose. If you need techniques, I need them. I use them.
Thank you.
One thing that steers you in the steers me in the direction of using techniques is recognizing negative emotion and asking myself, is this a neural pathway I want to have deeper?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So that I'm
yes.
more likely to fall right in that ditch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something about it.
It's a challenge when strong emotions start gripping us, trying to overtake us. They're very powerful. Very powerful. We have more power than those emotions. But they seem until we can step back from them. So real. And yet other people might observe us and say, wow, what are you doing? You look terrific today. Oh, wait a minute, let me tell you about my tragedy. But they don't see it. They say, wow, you look terrific today. Great color suits you. Looking good.
That's funny. That's what I said to the parishioner. The parishioner from last week.
Yes.
I said, you know, how are you doing today? I don't know yet. Oh, okay. Well, you look very nice. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I just woke up. I'm late. I'll let you know later. Okay. So, yeah, I notice those kind of things, and I put them in my bank for later, I guess. You know,
okay.
I notice the positivity, that what do you want to call it, awakenness, tools of others, and they're always there.
We can always choose to be positive, and we can actually always choose to be cheerful.
To be what?
Cheerful.
Cheerful.
Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, even if there's some unhappiness within us, like Viktor Frankl said, we can choose to be cheerful. We can. And somehow, when we choose to be cheerful, those strong emotions get softer. They get softened. Maybe.
Yeah.
So here we are, just watching and observing. Well, anyway.
Come on in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Bless.